sofa was to maybe replace Sirs.
These criteria, they were developed decades ago.
Is my patient going to crash or die after they leave my emergency department?
This was a burning question that we all had.
Is this the right screening tool?
Is my patient going to crash or die after they leave my emergency department?
How do I use this?
Welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Mike Winters here from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, and welcome to our second podcast here for January 2019. Thanks to all of you for listening to our first podcast on ECLS in the ED. Got lots of great feedback, comments in terms of social media, and we are very excited to get rolling with our second podcast here in 2019. And it is a very, very common question. Sepsis in the ED, specifically sepsis screening. I would say probably once or twice a month we get an email from one of you about our current methods to screen for sepsis in the ED, identify those patients early, and then initiate resuscitation. Well, we are fortunate to have both John and Rob as lead authors on a recent publication taking a look at QSOFA and sepsis screening in the ED. And that's what we're really going to base our discussion on for this particular podcast. Bring us up to date, talk about some of the controversies in sepsis screening in the ED. But before we get started, as always, I am joined by critical care and emergency medicine gurus, Dr. Peter W., Dr. Rob Rodriguez, and Dr. John Greenwood. Gentlemen, hello, this podcast.
Hey, Mike, how are you guys?
Doing well. And unfortunately, we're all sitting home watching our professional football teams, actually not watching our professional football teams, in the final Super Bowl coming in February. Some losses harder than others, but nevertheless, we can certainly fall back onto some great educational content. Rob, how are you doing?
Doing very well, actually. Our teams out here were, here in the Bay Area, were not competitive at all, but I'm a native Texan and a Cowboy fan, and they had a pretty good season. A little bummed that they departed early, but I guess that's how it goes.
Doing well up here in the Northeast. Aside from football, we're seeing our flu volume skyrocket over the past month. It's been maybe a little bit of a late boom. I don't know about you guys, but had a lot of sick flu patients come in more recently.
That is surprising. I'll be honest, in our ED or inner city Baltimore, I think flu activity remains sporadic and at a moderate level. I've been surprised we haven't been as inundated as we normally are this time of year with influenza. Any difference that you're seeing, Peter, and then Rob?
Not much. It's tailed off a little bit for us. I hope it stays that way.
We haven't been hit very hard this year with flu, knock on wood. Certainly less than last year.
Well, I think that's a great segue into this podcast topic on sepsis screening. Patients with influenza are likely going to present with an acute febrile illness, and in many cases, we're going to start down that sepsis pathway. So before we delve into Rob and John's article and a little bit more controversies, Peter, kind of set the stage, set the foundation for how we have traditionally thought of sepsis, identified sepsis, and potentially screened for it in patients coming into the emergency department.
The bulk of this comes from the Surviving Sepsis Work Group and also the Society of Critical Care Medicine. And so when we talk about what's traditional, right, what's the standard, we really need to think about SIRS, or the Systemic Inflammatory Response Syndrome. And remember that you qualify for just having two of the following four. One is either extremes of temperature, either a temperature greater than 38 or one less than 36. And again, remember that you'd prefer not to be hypothermic and septic. The second is a heart rate greater than 90. The third is a respiratory rate greater than 20 or a PaCO2 of less than 32. So requiring a blood gas for that. And then lastly, the fourth measure is a white blood cell count. And again, slight temperature extremes. Anything greater than 12,000 or less than 4,000 or greater than a 10% bandemia, so immature bands. And so that, two of the four to qualify for SIRS, and then the definition of sepsis along with those, you meet the definition of sepsis when you have SIRS plus a suspected source of infection. so a presumed source of infection, whether it be a pneumonia, whether it be meningitis, whether it be skin tissue, whether it be intra-abdominal or urinary tract infection. If you have a strong suspicion for that and the two of the four SIRS criteria, that qualifies you as sepsis. Now you kick into severe sepsis, which is really sepsis-induced tissue hypoperfusion or organ dysfunction. And what are some of those measures? This is the criteria is sepsis, your SIRS plus the source of infection, plus one of the following. Either a lactate level greater than 2.2 millimolar or a urine output less than 0.5 cc's per kilo per hour for more than 2 hours despite adequate resuscitation. So this really requires us to measure hourly urinary output. Additionally, you have acute lung injury with a PaO2 to FiO2 ratio less than 250 in the absence of pneumonia as our primary infection source, or you can have acute lung injury with a PaO2 to FiO2 ratio less than 250 in the presence of pneumonia as the primary infection source. So you can be on either side of this dysfunction with PaO2 and FiO2, either pneumonia or no pneumonia. So it could be ARDS, not suspicious of pneumonia, or frank pneumonia, or a clear chest x-ray with still that hypoxemia. You could also have creatinine greater than 2, a bilirubin greater than 2, a platelet count less than 100,000, and that's a really marker for severity of disease with that low platelet count, and then coagulopathy and INR greater than 1.5. So again, severe sepsis is going to be measuring those organ dysfunctions. I just gave you a list of those that includes everything from lactate, a coagulopathy, urine dysfunction, creatinine dysfunction, bilirubin dysfunction, a low platelet count, or difficulty with oxygenation in the lungs.
Let me jump in here and hit just a few highlights on what Peter went over there for us. A lot of information on things that we currently use with respect to the SIRS criteria really being based upon temperature, heart rate, respiratory rate, and white blood cell count, and how it's not good to be hypothermic and sepsis, a very poor prognostic sign. With respect to sepsis-induced tissue hypoperfusion, remember there can be a number of lab abnormalities as well that indicate organ dysfunction, such as a creatinine greater than 2, platelets less than 100,000, coagulopathy, elevated bilirubin, decreases in urine output, and of course you're used to lactic acidosis. Now with that being said, let's turn our attention now to QSOFA and the new sepsis definitions. Outstanding. So we've historically used that, and many of us are very, very familiar with these definitions, with these criteria, and many institutions, not only in the U.S., but probably across the world, have really implemented or utilized SIRS from a sepsis screening standpoint into their acute care setting. Rob, I'm going to turn to you. Peter's given us the foundation for much of our screening, but I think we all probably recognize, well, maybe these aren't as practical in the ED. Expand upon that a little bit.
Yeah, so these criteria, they were developed decades ago, really. And over time, they've been found to be problematic. And these criteria are basically impractical from the ED standpoint in the sense that they rely on the lab test of white blood cell count that, you know, you're really not going to be able to have that right away. As far as I know, there's no point of care white blood cell count around. So that element of SIRS sepsis criteria is impractical from an initial triage ED standpoint. These criteria have also been found to be insensitive. In a recent New England Journal study published a couple of years ago, they found that approximately 12% of critically ill septic patients who wound up dying, they did not meet SIRS sepsis criteria early on. And then finally, we've all recognized that the SIRS criteria are really nonspecific. A ton of conditions beyond sepsis cause tachycardia, elevated respiratory rate, and even elevations in your temperature and white blood cell count. So you wind up throwing everything in that sepsis basket that really is not sepsis. So you can wind up over-triaging patients with sepsis who, in fact, have something else going on. So recognizing these limitations investigators and experts from the Society of Critical Care Medicine and the European Society of Intensive Care Medicine, they basically proposed new criteria and definitions to update and replace the SIRS sepsis criteria. And they developed the SOFA criteria. And the SOFA criteria are 14, I believe it is, criteria that involve a lot of lab tests and other cutoff points for vital signs and so forth. The SOFA criteria are intended for use in the ICU, but they also developed and proposed what's called the Quick Sequential Organ Failure Assessment, or QSOFA criteria, which are really very, very simple. It consists of three criteria. One is systolic blood pressure less than 100 millimeters of mercury. The second is respiratory rate greater than 22 breaths per minute. And the third is altered mental status with the standard Glasgow coma score less than 15, making a patient meet that criterion. And so these three criteria, or QSOFA, were proposed to be used in the ED or at other places outside of the ICU. And patients are given 1 point for each of these criteria. And patients with a QSOFA score greater than or equal to 2 were proposed to be at high risk of poor outcomes.
Let me just break in, Rob. I think a lot of people are familiar with QSOFA, and I think you've done a great job redefining that. And it hasn't come without controversy. I think once Sepsis 3 was put forth in JAMA and we began learning about QSOFA, I think a lot of places rushed to implement QSOFA and replace some of the more traditional screening methods that Peter started off this discussion with. John, let me turn to you. Is this the right screening tool? Are there potential problems, or is QSOFA better?
As I look back and look at the intent of what SCCM and ESICM were trying to do, I think they were trying to really separate out a definition and then a screening tool, whereas historically SIRS was both a screening tool and used for a diagnosis. And ultimately, they really wanted to highlight and use SOFA, which is, as Rob said, you know, looking at six different organ systems on a spectrum, to really define sepsis as being organ failure associated with infection, not just a normal inflammatory response. In fact, sepsis was more of a dysregulated or abnormal host response to infection that caused organ injury. And so aside from the diagnostic perspective, the screening tool really important. And so the QSOFA, the idea of that was to maybe replace SIRS for if there's clinical signs of end organ dysfunction or end organ injury as a result of the infection. But there are some problems with QSOFA to use it as a screening tool. So the development of it was with a very large database. It was a heterogeneous group of patients. Most were not in the ED. In fact, they were already in the hospital. It was really designed to detect 30-day mortality, which for the ED really isn't a very applicable outcome. I mean, I think in the emergency department, we're really concerned, particularly with short-term outcomes. Is my patient going to crash or die after they leave my emergency department, whether they go on to the inpatient world or to go home? You know, I think ED screening in general are meant to predict things like, will this person need ICU care? Are they going to progress to shock or organ failure? Should I be worried about intubating this patient rather than sending them home with antibiotics? And 30-day mortality really is too long of a period of time for the ED to be really used as an effective screening tool. So I think that's where the conflicts around QSOFA.
Outstanding, John, bringing us up to date in the current controversies, which brings us to your and Rob's article from the American Journal of Emergency Medicine just published, titled A Comparison of QSOFA with Current Emergency Department Tools for Screening of Sepsis Patients for Critical Illness. So great job, guys. Congratulations on the publication. And Rob, maybe start us off by taking us through the highlights of this particular study.
Yeah, so I remember reading QSOFA late in 2016 and reading about how they proposed it. And as John well described, the limitations in its use in the ED. And so a group of us thought, well, this is not a pragmatic type look at the screening tool in the ED. As John described, it's just really not ED-centric. So our objective in this study was to assess what QSOFA as a sepsis screening tool from a pragmatic ED-centered vantage. And specifically, we sought to determine the screening performance of QSOFA for predicting infectious disease patients' need for critical care and for mortality within the first 72 hours of admission to the hospital from the ED, not this 30-day mortality outcome. And in it, we wanted to compare the screening performance of QSOFA with the most commonly currently used ED sepsis identification tools, which are the SIRS sepsis criteria, severe sepsis criteria, and lactate levels. So that was our overall objective. It's really just to look at it from an ED-centered vantage point. In our methods, we had five hospitals, three academic centers, and two community hospitals. This was a retrospective study, and inclusion criteria were adults, in other words, age greater than 17 years, patients admitted to the hospital, that being an inpatient ward, an ICU, or an observation unit from the ED with an infectious disease-related illness. We excluded patients who transferred from an outside hospital, who were admitted to the hospital primarily for other reasons beyond their infectious disease diagnosis. In other words, a patient who had a minor cellulitis but was a victim of severe trauma and was admitted to the hospital because of trauma, this patient would be excluded. And then we also excluded patients who left AMA prior to hospital admission. And our primary outcome, we were really trying to focus this on the ED-centered type of view. And so we developed our primary outcome as such to be a composite of ICU stay, receipt of any vasopressor support, unexpected hospital death within 72 hours of presentation. So if you had any one of these three, either you were admitted to the ICU, you got started on norepinephrine, or you died unexpectedly within 72 hours, any of those qualified as our positive outcome. So, John, you want to tell us about our results, what we found?
So this was a fairly expansive retrospective review. So we screened about 21,000 patients across all the centers that were involved in the study. And eventually we were able to narrow this down to about 3,700 patients who were admitted to the hospital with an infectious disease diagnosis. Now, of those 3,700 patients, 58% of them met sepsis criteria and 29% met sepsis criteria. So we looked at QSOFA scores, which were greater than or equal to 1, which were about 49%. 16% about had a QSOFA score greater than or equal to 2. And about 4% of patients had all three QSOFA criteria in the emergency department. So of the 2,500 patients who had lactate levels drawn in the ED, of the original 21,000 that were screened, we also screened out lactate. So 34% had a lactate level greater than or equal to 2, and about 8% of the 2,500 patients had a lactate level greater than or equal to 4. So a couple other things to point out just with what we found with the results. So about 14% of patients had our primary composite outcome of ICU admission vasopressor requirement or unexpected death. 90% of these patients were obviously admitted to ICU as expected, a lot of them since it was part of the composite outcome. 40% of patients received vasopressor support, and almost 9% of patients died unexpectedly. And basically 43% of these patients had one or more of our composite outcome. So a fair amount. And then we kind of looked at the screening performance of QSOFA primary outcome as a measure of SIRS or severe sepsis, QSOFA, and lactate levels. There's a table that kind of summarizes all this that's really helpful to take a look at, but I'll do my best to try and also kind of describe it within the podcast. So let's start with QSOFA. So QSOFA greater than or equal to 1 compared with SIRS basically had nearly identical sensitivity as well as negative likelihood ratios. So they compared relatively well. But QSOFA greater than or equal to 1 did have significantly greater specificity compared to SIRS, about 56 to 57% compared 45% in our patient cohort. Now, if we look at QSOFA greater than or equal to 2, it actually had a higher specificity than the traditional severe sepsis criteria. Now, that did come at the expense of a lower sensitivity. But what about patients with all three criteria? So all three QSOFA criteria. Well, those patients had a very high specificity, but a lower sensitivity than any other criteria. So I think it was a fairly interesting finding that it was a very high specificity screening tool for sepsis, at least for our composite outcome. Now, when we compared that with patients who had a lactate greater than 2, lactate greater than or equal to 2 really had a balanced screening performance, but was much less sensitive than even just a qSOFA greater than or equal to 1. I think all of us, we get these smoldering lactate levels, and you know, the question is it really their infection that's causing organ injury, or is it something else? Didn't really perform all that well. So compare that to, so like qSOFA greater than or equal to 3, so all three criteria, a high lactate level, so a lactate greater than 4, had a very high specificity for our composite outcome, but a low sensitivity. Lastly, two more important points, and I know this is a lot, and I really encourage, again, the audience to take a look at the table, because I think this will be a lot clearer. Sometimes sensitivity specificity can sound tough to keep track of on a podcast, but the last two are really combinations, because we really wanted to know, okay, what's the clinical utility of a screening tool in addition to adding lactate to the screening tool? So qSOFA in general, all clinical, there's no lab testing, but if we add lactate to it, what does that do in terms of screening performance? So when we looked at lactate scores greater than 2 with a qSOFA greater than or equal to 1, that combination had a very high sensitivity, but an extremely low specificity. So again, that lactate greater than 2, or at least between 2 and 4, really didn't help all that much for specificity. But when you add in a lactate greater than 4 and 2 or more qSOFA criteria, had a fairly balanced screening performance that was in between severe sepsis and qSOFA greater than or equal to 2. And we'll wrap this up again, but combining them may actually be helpful. So that being said, this is a perfect study in my eyes. I would say follow exactly what it says. There's no limitations. Well, no, I'm biased. I'm just kind of messing around. Rob, tell us what you think are some of the problems with our results as well as our methods and kind of what we did and maybe could have done better.
Yeah, I think our main limitation was that this was a retrospective study, and therefore some patients didn't have all of the notations of the criteria. And certainly, as I mentioned before, a large proportion of patients did not have lactate levels performed, and really couldn't change that with a retrospective type study. The other limitation is that we did not look at all at patients who screened positive for sepsis and then were discharged home from the ED. In other words, like, we did not examine at all any patients who went home from the ED. So all this can tell us about is that group of patients that were admitted from the hospital with these diagnoses, not about general complete screening for patients. So it's important to note that a number of other investigators have looked at the topic as well. We weren't like Columbus or anything like that in terms of this type of looking at qSOFA. But most of these investigators still looked at 30-day mortality as their primary outcome. And so I'm not really convinced that that is a primary outcome that is what we're looking at in terms of ED. We really want to look at those other outcomes like we did. But there is some interesting international work that has looked at other screening tools, specifically the National Early Warning Score, NEWS, N-E-W-S, and the Modified Early Warning Score, which is M-E-W-S criteria. And these are readily available physiologic parameters, and you could get in the ED as well, similar to qSOFA. And in a single site study comparing qSOFA to these scores, they found that NEWS and MEWS, N-E-W-S and M-E-W-S, were more accurate than qSOFA at predicting early mortality and need for ICU care. So that's actually a pretty interesting study.
Well, John and Rob, thanks so much. And once again, congratulations. Outstanding study. Really some very, very interesting take-home points. Now, in terms of that, Peter, Rob and John have been talking for a little while, so let me bring you back into the conversation to really drive us home, wrap this up, and kind of give us the bottom line where we're at with qSOFA, as many places struggle with implementing a sepsis screening model. What is the bottom line? And maybe tell us what you're doing at LSU.
Great. So this is a phenomenal study. I really do like it because this was a burning question that we all had. And we talked about it on our podcast on more than one occasion. But I think the bottom line take-home message is that qSOFA, that criteria, has slightly better screening performance for critical illness than our currently used sepsis screening tools of SIRS. For ruling out critical illness, a qSOFA greater than 1 had equivalent sensitivity and negative predictive value to the service criteria, with slightly higher specificity and positive predictive value. So without the need for blood sampling, a qSOFA greater than 1 would be an attractive clinical screening tool to replace SIRS and sepsis criteria in RED. How do I use this and how do I teach this? I really do like the qSOFA score as predicting who needs ICU resources. So I use that and teach that strongly, both in the ED as well as in rapid responses on the floor. I use that to help me guide those patients towards ICU-level resources. I still teach some components of SIRS to make sure that my learners have a broad understanding of the different flavors or the heterogeneity of sepsis. That's how I put that together.
I think that's outstanding. Great way to summarize things, Peter. John, let me turn to you and then subsequently to Rob for your closing thoughts and what you're currently doing at Penn and then at UCSF.
Yeah, so currently at Penn, we still have stuck to the original SIRS criteria for screening. That's for getting towards a diagnosis. But me personally, for screening for critical illness, I certainly place a heavy weight, just as Peter does, on screening patients for who might decompensate or get sicker or maybe have a pause about, are they appropriate for the floor if they have an infection, using the qSOFA scoring values. You know, from a diagnostic standpoint, sepsis is a syndrome, so still looking for organ dysfunctions for the diagnosis part. But for screening for critical illness, I think qSOFA, it is fairly attractive.
How about you, Rob?
Yeah, so there's a lot of tradition and investment in the SIRS sepsis criteria as a screening tool. In fact, I'm sure all of your departments have formal sepsis alerts that are based on that. And so we're still struggling to transition away from that into this newer mode of sepsis screening. But I think where we're headed, and this is going to be the subject of our next paper, actually, which hopefully we will get out within the next year. I think where we're headed and what we're going to wind up using is a combination of qSOFA criteria plus point of care lactate levels. I think that they sort of make intuitive sense in that you don't have to wait for that white blood cell count, for example, that you use for SIRS sepsis. And I think that the inertia is headed that way. And I think ultimately we're going to wind up with qSOFA plus point of care lactates as our screening tool.
Really, really excellent points. Now, just to finish up the discussion, at Maryland, we do have a sepsis screening tool. Admittedly, it is a little bit of a black box, and it's more of a iteration using our electronic health record where it scans about 100 or so different variables and identifies patients who are at high risk of potentially sepsis or more severe critical illness. Now, I don't know all 100 plus variables that go into that equation, but it's certainly being evaluated and tested. So more to come on that respect, but I think all of your points are really, really great regarding qSOFA, the potential addition of lactate or point of care lactate. Very interesting in terms of what is next, Rob, in terms of that next paper and study. Well, let's wrap this discussion up. I think it's been outstanding. We've had a lot of controversial discussion points in terms of screening for sepsis in the ED. Undoubtedly, many of you are going to have questions regarding qSOFA, regarding some of the things that we talked about. Please shoot us an email. Happy to continue this discussion. And if need be, we will have a follow-up podcast based on the discussion that's generated offline. Now, before we say goodbye for this podcast, additional exciting news. Not only are we continuing to make progress on enhancements to the website and your experience overall with CCPEM, but we've got some exciting conferences. Peter, I'm going to turn to you. Critical points. We are moving the date and location. What is it going to be for 2019?
So for 2019, we're pretty excited. We're going to be in Scottsdale, Arizona, and we're going to be a little bit earlier in the year. It's going to be September 20th through the 22nd. Again, that's in Scottsdale, Arizona, beautiful property, but we're excited to get our critical care groove on there.
And for those of you who want to go to Critical Points, it is www.criticalpoints.net is the website to take a look at the new location, as well as the content, and just an amazing conference. Really had fun this past December in San Diego, and I'm definitely looking forward to Scottsdale, Arizona. In addition, we've got Resuscitation 2019. That's going to be held in Baltimore, June 26th through the 28th. That's upcoming in a few months, so go to www.resus2019.com to look at that agenda. That's going to be held here at the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. Really had a lot of fun with Resus 2018, and based upon feedback, we are returning, keeping it here in Leadership Hall in the School of Medicine. So two exciting things that we are really looking forward to. Once again, looking forward to the podcast enhancements and also reinstituting CME for all of you out there subscribing to the podcast. I think that's going to do it for this podcast, for do it for our January episodes here in 2019. Once again, Mike Winters here for Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine and the University of Maryland School of Medicine. We will look forward to talking to you on our February podcast. Bye for now.